The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmn.org. Thank you for listening.
It's from the True Dharma Eye Collection, Master Dogen's. Case 19, Ordinary Mind is the Way. Xiaozhou asked Master Nanquan, "What is the way?" Nanquan said, "Ordinary mind is the way." Xiaozhou said, "Shall I try to direct myself toward it?" Nanquan said, "If you try to direct yourself toward it, you move away from it." Xiaozhou said, "If I don't try, then how will I know it's the way?" Nanquan said, "The way is not concerned with knowing or not knowing. Knowing is illusion, not knowing is blank consciousness. If you truly arrive at the great way of no trying, it will be like great emptiness, vast and clear. How can we speak of it in terms of affirming or negating?" And Xiaozhou immediately realized this profound teaching. The commentary. Ordinary mind is perfect and complete, self-contained, self-fulfilling, its own accomplishment. Since it has existed before the kalpa of emptiness, it cannot be attained. Since it transcends time and space, it is always in the eternal present. This ordinary mind is the dharma of each moment of existence. It has no before or after. The poem. The enlightened and the deluded all live in its presence. Move toward it, and the sickness is increased. Describe it, and you miss its reality. Good morning. Good morning. All of the koans are teachings that are transformed into direct pointing, a direct practice. And each koan is trying to bring the student to realize one aspect of that multifaceted jewel. And there are some koans that, because of the student's karma, their affinity, it is very important or powerful to them. It may reach in very deeply. And there are some koans that are like that for everyone, that whether there's affinity or not, that should be studied very, very carefully. And this is one of those, I believe. It comes fairly early in the training for students doing koans in the Gateless Gate, and which in a way is appropriate. It's good to be introduced to it early, but it really should come up again and again and again. I remember when I worked on this and worked on it with my teacher, and after finishing and going on to the next one, thinking, I need to keep this very close. I need to continue to examine this, and I still feel that way. It teaches there's nothing that is vain, nothing that is self-clinging. The teachings all point to enlightened wisdom. The Buddha observes and understands the end to which every teaching tends. He also understands the workings of the deepest mind of living beings. This Dharma is of a single flavor, emancipation, nirvana. To free ourselves of greed, anger, and delusion, of anxiety and stress and fear and worry, and most essentially of our false views, our ways of seeing things that are not fully in accord and so don't allow us to live peacefully, to live in harmony. What is the way of the Buddha? Xiaozhou asked his teacher, Nanquan, "What is the way? What is the way of the Buddha?" Nanquan said, "Ordinary mind is the way." And this ordinary mind is no different from your mind right now. It's no different from the mind of each person. And it's not the same as your everyday mind. Otherwise, as Master Shimayama says in his commentary, if that were true, then every person on earth would already know it. We wouldn't have to seek out teachers. We wouldn't have to practice or train. In many ways, this koan is much easier to misunderstand than to see clearly. Some koans are hard to understand in any way, right? Because their language is so unusual. This koan language seems very accessible. What is the way? Ordinary mind is the way, everyday mind, which is why it's more difficult to see. Because it's so simple, because it's so very close, it's more difficult to see. Dadaroshi says, ordinary mind is perfect and complete, self-contained, self-fulfilling. It is its own accomplishment. It is self-fulfilling. You know, in moments where we practice and we have that, you have those moments of complete affirmation. Something is, you experience it as true, where there's no more seeking outside in that one moment. There's something, it's as those things just kind of settle into themselves. There's a kind of an inward alignment, a self-fulfilling that we may think of as the result of something we just did. What did I just do? Right? What was I just doing in my zazen? But really, it's the result of not doing. And when we practice, our everyday mind can seem very far away from this perfect and complete. It seems imperfect, fragmented, seeking elsewhere, looking for fulfillment in all kinds of things. You know, I mean, really, sometimes when I see the enormous amount of passionate energy that people give to things, and things that I think, really? Is that really helping you? It obviously is in some ways. It's giving them something. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. We wouldn't do it. But to realize this mind, don't we need to attain it? The Buddha way is unattainable. I vow to attain it. How do you attain the unattainable? It doesn't say the Buddha way is unattainable, so just don't even try. The Buddha way is unattainable. I vow not to attain it. Right? So Zhao Zhou says, should I direct myself toward it? That's a very logical question. If that ordinary mind is the way, then I should move towards it. I should seek it out. I should encounter it. But Nanquan says, but if you do, you'll start to move away from it. Right. Dadaroshi used to often say, there's no contradiction in reality, only in language. When we speak of things, when we think of things, then contradictions arise. Conflicts, confusion. So what is this like? What is it like that there is something that if you move towards it, you move away from it? Right? It's like the sun seeking radiance, or water seeking wetness, or the moon seeking luminosity. We can understand that and have faith that it is not apart from ourselves. I think that's a big part of what draws many of us to practice, is it's not outside. We have, it sort of affirms our sense that whatever we might do, might realize, that it would actually transform our lives has to be within. But having that faith doesn't keep us from turning away, seeking elsewhere. And without seeking, we won't find it. So how do we seek? In a way, that's really what so much of practice and training is about, is how to seek, how to attain the unattainable. And Xiao Zhou says, but if I don't try, how will I know? How will I know it's the way? It's an honest question. Shibayama says, this is a natural and proper question. Only if one pursues this sincere and earnest quest can they have true training. So how do we seek? How do we turn towards? This is what Zazen is bringing us into, in the very first moment we start sitting. It's right there. And we are practicing that, bringing that to life, making that real. And so Dada Roshi says, the way isn't concerned with knowing or not knowing. Knowing is illusion. It's just more thoughts, more ideas, more concepts. But not knowing is blank consciousness. If you truly arrive at the great way of not trying, of no trying, you will encounter the great emptiness, vast and clear. Here, how can you speak in terms of affirming or negating? There are not so many things. And so experiencing the effort of our thinking mind, the weight of our thinking mind, what it creates for us, then it's logical to try and just, well, let's just shut that down. Let's shut that off. Let's just not think when we see how binding thoughts can be and how we grasp at them. And so that's a pitfall that we fall into. That on the one hand, we need to actually experience the mind, and the mind's natural capacity towards stillness, towards silence, towards rest. And to do that without being in conflict with our thoughts, without creating a sense that our thoughts, that there's something wrong with the thoughts themselves. There's nothing wrong with the thoughts themselves. Some may be more or less skillful, but the thought themselves is not an action. The thought itself is not, does not yet have consequence until we bring it forward, until we react. Ordinary mind is perfect and complete, self-contained, self-fulfilling. Dogen speaks of self-fulfilling samadhi. And he says, what has been authentically transmitted by all the Buddhas is self-fulfilling samadhi. It calls for following a teacher and following a sutra. So let go of the self for the sake of Dharma without knowing how many thousands of times you do so. Seek Dharma for the sake of the self without knowing in how many billions of eons you have done so. This is the vital activity of self-fulfilling samadhi. Don't keep count. Don't track. Bodhidharma said, letting go of the self is the greatest gift, the greatest charity, the greatest thing we could offer. And Dogen is saying, do that. Thousands of times, hundreds of thousands of times. This ordinary mind is never apart from now. It has no before or after. It is never at odds with reality. But one might logically ask, but what about all of my negative thoughts, my negative painful emotions that create suffering for me, that by virtue of which I inflict suffering on others, biased views, karmic afflictions, suffering. If they're not apart from ordinary mind, then why do they create so much trouble? One teacher said, earth, water, fire, wind, and space are inseparable from this one flavor of reality. Nirvana and samsara are not two, because they have the same nature, and that nature is all-pervasive. So earth, water, fire, wind, space are the five elements, constituent parts of everything. Form, sensation, perception, mental formations, and consciousness are the constituent elements of what we call ourself. Happiness and sadness, grief and joy, anger and compassion, greed and generosity are the everyday experiences that we call life. Inseparable from the one flavor of reality, they have the same nature. And that's very difficult to have faith in because they seem so intrinsically different. One is pleasurable, one is painful, one leads to good consequences, one leads to bad consequences. Last week, Rebecca Lee and I did a mando, and I spoke about grief, despair, and quoted Joanna Macy, who said that despair derives from our interconnectedness. that our capacity to grieve for others and our power, ability to meet that grief, not just that we have grief, but our actual ability to be in grief within wisdom springs from the great matrix of relationships in which our being arises. We are open systems sustained by flows of energy and information. They go beyond the reach of our conscious ego, our thinking mind, our ideas. So how are grief and joy one flavor of reality? Well, it says they have the same nature. And so when we get entangled in the meaning that we give to an emotion, to our memories of it, our associations with it, what we think about it, whether it's right or wrong, we are creating more and more distance from the thing itself. And so from the very beginning, Zazen instruction is giving us instruction in how to, wanting to relieve our suffering based in separation, how to practice not separating in the moment that the manifestation of separation arises. And we struggle with that because that distance, that apartness, that separation is so habitual. There's a kind of comfort in that, which is why when we actually begin to close that distance and experience more intimacy, oftentimes we react with anxiety or fearfully, as though something is wrong. It's unfamiliar. And we respond to that by creating separation. We distract ourselves. We move back. And so we have to experience that again and again and again. Let go of the self for the sake of the Dharma without knowing how many thousands of times you do that. What is grief when there's no knowing or not knowing? And it's not an abstract question. It's really brings us right into the heart of the matter. Dogen says it calls for following a teaching, following a sutra. So we might say that in the moment of a strong emotion, the sutra is that emotion. But just like in a taught sutra, expounded sutra, we have to know how to read it. We have to know how to take it in. And very often, in order to actually encounter the reality of that emotion and begin and to experience its real nature, which is its liberation, we have to wander through sensations, thoughts, ideas, memories, reactive reactions arising that surround that particular experience, that emotion. That's why if in experiencing that, if you cannot name it, because once we name it, that name brings in lots of history. And we need to face all of those many beings that are arising that actually are creating the separation between ourselves and that one flavor of reality. Let's call it grief. Let's call it sadness. Let's call it anger. Why do we have to face them? Because there they are. That's the reality. And if we don't, then we will do something else. We will shut them down. We will avoid them, which just creates more separation. When we turn away, things grow stronger. When we come closer, they lose their power. They lose their own power. They lose their deluded power. And they begin to gain the power of their true reality. They begin to gain the power of liberation. So now those emotions have the power to express, to communicate, to soothe, to connect. You know, when the Buddha taught about selflessness, that anatman is no self, no self. But self means a self that is enduring, that is has its own existence, that is eternal, and is you. It's not denying that we have experiences where what we recognize as our self arises in our awareness, and we become self-aware. And it's within that self that we raise bodhicitta, that we recognize what's happening in that moment, we practice it, that we return from our wandering, that we try to practice compassion in a moment when we might lash out and say something or do something, right? That sense of self arising and the consequences to it of our actions can be put to good use. So it's not that we're trying to get rid of that sense of self that arises, but we are trying to liberate ourselves from the false view that it exists as something, as an entity, as an identity of who I am, which leads to lots of problems. And that we are able to more and more not live in a kind of hyper self-consciousness, self-awareness that is really based in anxiety and self-doubt and fear, self-consciousness. It's the clinging. And so to see into this ordinary mind, Master Dogen says, do not love what is far away, but don't despise it either. Just become completely familiar with it. Don't despise what's near at hand, and don't love it either. Just become completely familiar with it. Make your mind clear and sharp. Nothing is to be extinguished. Nothing is to be eradicated. That path is basically a path of conflict, a path of going to war against ourselves. And at the same time, to be just passive means that things will just carry on as they have. What is that middle way? And this is where ordinary mind can be so easily misunderstood as just do what you're doing, right? That being natural means just, you know, do whatever happens, right? But that's just samsara. And then as practitioners, we can call that dharma. We can call that my natural mind. We can call that ordinary mind, but it's just delusion. And so when we hear a teaching such as the nature of desire is nirvana, you should also understand that anger and delusion and so on in this way are all have the nature of nirvana. Enlightenment resides in conflicting emotions. Or there is no difference between lust and enlightenment, or conflicting emotions, or wisdom. Wisdom is a fire that consumes a forest of brambles. So from a deluded perspective, we can hear that as saying, you can have your anger, you can have your desire, right? And you can have your spiritual practice, and you don't have to do anything. Just keep doing what you've been doing. Your conflicting emotions are wisdom. Right? That's not the wisdom that consumes the forest of entanglements. That's the delusion that burns down the house. It's like in the burning house parable in the Lotus Sutra that we've been studying. The Buddha at one point says that the children, the people who are in the house that are preoccupied with their thing, their play toys, and don't want to leave, while the house is being consumed by fire, the Buddha says, they don't understand what the fire is. They don't understand what the house is. They don't understand the danger that they're in. And I had a mondo with some of the New Zealand Sangha last night, and we were discussing this, and somebody brought that something up about the playthings. And I said, you know, anything can be a plaything. Zazen could be a plaything. that we're enchanted with, and the fire is all around us, and we don't see it. Dada Roshi used to say, you know, if everyone around you is in a panic about something and you're very calm, maybe there's something you're not aware of. And so how do we make this profound teaching, true dharma, true practice, real liberation? It means we have to meet our ordinary mind to realize ordinary mind. We have to meet our ordinary mind as we are able to meet it in this moment, which means might be from our own entanglement, from our own attachments, from our own reactivity, because that's the reality before us. You know, it's one of the basic, really important kind of principles of practice. As Dogen says, when one dharma arises before you, practice that dharma, because that's arisen as a result of karmic causes and conditions, which means it is a fruit that is naturally arising based on these essential factors. And so there is a realness to it, an authenticity, a timeliness to it. Why is it arising now? Why not before? Because the conditions are right for it to arise in this moment. And that when we practice it in this moment and trust that, then that karmic path is shifting. And if it's a helpful thing that's arising, then it gets stronger. If it's an unhelpful thing that's arising, then it gets weaker. But when we sort of lay our agenda on top of that and think, no, that's not what I should be focusing on. I want to focus on this. That's ego-driven. That's not paying attention to what our mind, our own being, is actually presenting us with. In the Mahamudra tradition, there's speaking of ordinary mind. One teacher said, ordinary mind is pure when left in its natural condition. Do not corrupt it through interference. Do not try to grasp onto it. Do not try to release it. Simply leave it in its natural state. And here, natural needs to be very carefully examined, because natural is not just whatever happens, right? That's condition. Natural is what is arising from non-doing, what is not created, what is not a result of a thought or an idea or a desire. To simply leave it in its natural state is a state of complete, vividly aware relaxation. Dogen speaks of it as miraculous awareness. Milarepa said, meditators who try to grasp ordinary mind are deluded. Ordinary mind will elude you. You will never be able to discover it. I mean, that's the sort of the essence of practice, of working with a koan, of having an aspiration. There is something that we do seek, and that we should be seeking, we need to seek. But if that very thing, we grasp at it because we want to attain it, because that's how we get what we seek, it will forever elude us. So that doesn't stop us from grasping. And so we, you know, a lot of time are practicing grasping and not grasping at the same time. We are sincere. I think most people, practitioners, really are sincere and are really practicing, trying to practice the Dharma, practicing non-attachment. But at the same time, there's subtle or holding out for something that we're grasping, because if I don't, how will I know that I attain it if I don't seek it out, if I don't turn towards it? How will I know? I might go right past it and not know. And so as we get closer, we both need to get frustrated and see the consequences of our grasping and recognize how it is keeping us, and at the same time become more confident about truly not trying to grasp, not trying to release, not interfering, and be able to be discovering what that is not passive. Another teacher said, to cultivate ordinary mind is supreme among all practices. Ordinary mind is Buddha embodied in your human form. And then that teacher went on to say, it must be said, though, that a full understanding of ordinary mind is extremely difficult to attain. And I would say, to understand and live. But we shouldn't be disheartened by that. We should be inspired, invigorated. Because it means we can spend a long time exploring, examining, discovering more and more fully this ordinary mind, which is present in every moment. And every step we take brings that more into our lives. And that's a good thing. Master Dogen said, everyday mind, ordinary mind, means to maintain ordinary mind in this world or in any world. In any world in which you show up, maintain ordinary mind. Practice ordinary mind. Yesterday goes forth from this moment, and today comes forth from this place. While going, the boundless sky goes. While coming, the entire earth comes. This is ordinary mind. And we have, you know, we have glimpses of that in when we're in the midst of our samsaric mind, our grasping mind, our fearful mind, when strong emotions are arising and we are entangled, things become very small, right? We all have that experience, don't we? Where the body becomes very constricted, everything becomes very tight, drawn in. The mind becomes very, very little space, no room. That's where our reactivity comes from. That's why it is that when somebody says something and you just get angry, or you just say something, you just lash out, and you don't remember having made a choice about that, and didn't, because everything has become so narrow that in essence there is no choice. In reality, there are many choices. But in our mind, in our actual sort of lived experience, there's no choice. There's not even a matter of making a choice. There's just, but we call that a reaction, a reactivity, being impulsive. And then we've also, most practitioners have had the experience of when that self-fulfilling samadhi, when there's some stability, when the mind is returning more to its natural state, which doesn't mean being void of thought. Void is a natural, thoughts are a natural aspect of our mind. But unexamined thoughts, uncontrolled thoughts, being at the mercy of thoughts, habitual thoughts, that's not a result of our natural mind, that's just conditioning. That's just a lack of having developed our natural capacity, our inherent capacity for mindfulness and concentration. And so, but when that begins to develop, right, how do we experience that? We experience that in the body as being more expansive, of being more settled, of being more stable. Joanne Macy talks about this flow. I spoke about that, I think, a little bit last week. We speak of ki, spiritual energy, right? Buddhism talks about the winds and these channels that the winds move through, and other disciplines have their own understandings of this, right? That our attachments are just a bottling, a kind of log jam, right? Like a traffic jam of our energy that's not moving. That when there's a conflict and that we're mired in it, we're just sort of dwelling in it obsessively. Something's going on at work, something going on in a relationship. There's an energy that is seeking a passage, and it's finding no passage. And oftentimes that's because we haven't decided not to do something, and we haven't decided to do something, right? So there's no outlet, there's no way for this energy to move. And so if I choose to not take action and really take ownership of that, now my mind can move towards resolution, right? It's no longer in conflict. Or if I make a decision to act, to speak to somebody, to take some action, there's also resolution, because now that energy can flow forward into that action. But either way, it's no longer trapped. And it's not that now everything is going to work out swimmingly, right? We'll get what we want, or we'll save the day, or there won't be difficult consequences. Sometimes when we do the right thing, there are difficult consequences. But that conflict has passed. And so that energy, that lack of flow, if you will, that is tension, that is tightness, that is restlessness, inner anxiety, sometimes it arises as a panic attack, that's actually very powerful spiritual energy that is seeking wisdom, that is seeking an understanding of mind and body so that it can be well used. You know, in a sense, samsara is using our vital energies in very unproductive ways, very unconstructive ways. And it's exhausting. And so when we practice this moment, this awareness, this standing meditation, this sitting meditation, this listening meditation, and we are not apart from this moment. As the Buddha said in mindfulness, your alertness is the aspect of mindfulness where you know where you are. You know, you experience that energy, you experience that tightness. You are aware of your breath, whether it's shallow or deep, whether it's long or short, whether it's slow or fast. You know that you're cool or you're warm. That's moving into the inner chamber. It's just taking steps towards. It is not yet what Nanquan, what these masters are speaking of, this very profound, ordinary mind, but it is moving closer. And that in that, as mindfulness develops into samadhi, then the knowing can begin to drop away, naturally. All of the dualities, the discriminating consciousness. Dogen says, everyday mind opens the gate of your inner chamber. And because thousands of gates and myriads of doors open and close all at once, this is everyday mind in every moment, arising and passing. And now, in this very mind, the boundless sky and the entire earth are like unrecognized words, a voice from the deep. Never heard before, but somehow familiar, not foreign. Words are all inclusive, mind is all inclusive, things are all inclusive. Avalokiteshvara, realizing mind, all beings are one of one essence, all inclusive. And although there is birth and death in every moment of this life of birth and death, the body, after the final body, is never known. Even though you don't know it, if you arouse the thought of enlightenment, of bodhicitta, you will move forward on the way of enlightenment. That's why raising bodhicitta as a practice is so important. Every day we should be raising bodhicitta. We'd be raising the aspiration to clear our minds of delusion, to let go of our attachments, to bring forth compassion into this world, to be a positive force. When you do that, you are moving forward on the way. This moment that you seek, Dogen says, is already here. Do not doubt it in the least. I remember in my early years when I would hear teachers or my teachers say that, I would think, yeah, it's easy for you to say. Like what? Like what's my problem? Yes, it's easier for them to say because they see it directly. Why was it hard for me to hear? Why was it hard for me to trust? Why was it easy for me to doubt? Even if you should doubt it, this too is nothing but ordinary mind. So don't worry, Dogen is saying. Master Wu Man in the Gateless Gate wrote this poem about ordinary mind. Hundreds of flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer, snow in winter. When there is no vain cloud in your mind, for you, this is a good season. When there's no self-clinging cloud in your mind, for you, this ordinary mind is a good season. This day is a good day. This day is a complete day. It is all-inclusive. It is not lacking. When we free ourselves of the way it should be, supposed to be, the way I want it to be, then we can begin to meet it as it is in trust. It is not an accident. Right? There's a reason for this appearing in this moment. Not a cosmic consciousness reason, but a reason of our own doing, a reason of our doing together. And whether what's arising is a hell realm or a heavenly realm, it is arising of our doing. Because it is arising of our doing, it cannot arise of our doing. If it's moving in a certain direction as a result of our doing, it can move in a different direction as a result of our doing. And that, in essence, is what we put our shoulder into every day. Into moving forward on that path. To bring this mind into the infinite seasons that arise every day.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.